Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm joined on the podcast today by BZ Marsh, author of the new novel, Queen of Thieves. The Sun newspaper wrote about the novel, a colorful tale of love, lust, making good, and revenge. BZ, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Jeff. I'm really thrilled to be here.
Wonderful. If someone hasn't yet heard about your novel, Queen of Thieves, how would you describe the novel?
Well, I'd say it's a hopefully gripping and exciting story, historical fiction about a ring of daring and determined female thieves set immediately post-World War II in London. So it's revenge, it's love, it's daring, and it's crime. And it's women gangsters. It's female gangsters for once.
That's wonderful. Do you remember the original idea or impetus that led you to writing Queen of Thieves?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a two-strand story, really. My grandmother, who was born in 1905, used to work as a barmaid in Soho in London in the 1930s. And she actually was helping to raise me during the 1970s. And she used to tell me these stories about this wild group of females who used to go running through the stores, stuffing fur coats into their knickers. And I thought at the time this was like a silly fairy story, something to make me laugh. And then many years later, I started out, having been a journalist, I started as an author, and I was asked to interview a gangster to write about his life. And it turned out that his sister had been a member of this actual gang, the 40 Thieves. So the two things kind of collided, and I thought, well, hang on, there's this family story that my gran always used to tell me about this London history, and here's the reality. And I got to meet the relatives, the descendants of this gang member. She was called Eva, and that really, for me, just sparked it, and I just thought, I've got to write about this. It took some time, a few years down the line, to sort of bring it all together because there was a lot of research, but that, for me, was the spark. So I guess it had been there from childhood, only just not knowing. Just one of those family stories. A legend.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the research. What kind of research did you do as you were planning the novel?
Well, I actually went out with and kind of went, they offered to take me shopping, some of the granddaughters of the original gang. And I'm embarrassed to say some of them were still kind of, you know, were using those thieving methods. I never saw them do it, but they let me into their secrets. So I actually took girls out for lunch, you know, went around the shops with them. They explained how their grands and great aunts would have rolled furs on the hanger, how they would have, you know, done the distraction techniques. So I had that kind of amazing firsthand insight. And then I'm a national newspaper journalist. So I used to work on the staff of the Daily Mail, and the Telegraph newspaper over here. So I've been trained to do a lot of kind of historical research. So I started looking at the family trees of the women. I started to look at where they'd lived. I used the National Archives and went into police files, which was amazing because I found police photographs, mugshots of the girls, which from the 20s and 30s, which was incredible. I mean, to actually see them, they were like, caught, and they were wearing the fur coats that they'd been, you know, stealing. So I got a kind of, I felt like I got almost close enough to touch these girls through history. Do you know what I mean? It was,
yes,
it was an amazing, I loved the research. I you know, some people find research boring, but for me, I think it hopefully helps the novel to feel really real. Like I wanted to take you back in time to post-war London, you know, 1947, 1948, when it was really kind of, you know, pretty poor, pretty desperate after the war. And I really wanted to be able to transport the reader there. So I think that research was quite important. Yeah.
That's great. Can you tell us about your initial writing journey that led you to making the shift from writing journalism to writing fiction and
yeah,
novels?
Well, basically motherhood. I mean, I'd always known, I'd done an English and French literature degree, a joint honours degree over here in England at Leeds University. And so I was quite academic, I think, as a student in my late teens, early 20s. But I always knew I wanted to be a journalist, and it was like an itch I couldn't help but scratch. So I started off on like the student newspaper and then regional newspapers. That was my first job. And then I was picked up by the Daily Mail, which is, you know, an amazing newspaper to work for. And I was there for many, many years, like a decade, basically, on the staff doing like health reporting, investigations, hard news, but often with like a kind of female, you know, focus. So it was about women's health and things like that. And then it was just having children. I obviously took a kind of career break. So I had my two sons, and I was kind of freelancing here and there. And I think it was something to do with having kids and thinking you've been through something when you have kids, you're tired. I was trying to find a job that was going to fit around raising the children and being at home as much as I could. And I think from then it was like, well, that dream that I'd had maybe when I was much younger that I would one day write a book, I thought, well, life isn't a dress rehearsal, actually. I'm watching my children grow up here. I think I can give this a go. And so that was kind of how it started. But I did not start out, Jeff, writing historical fiction. Not at all. I wrote something completely different. I'm a bit embarrassed about it now, actually. It was a kind of romantic, slightly saucy, bit sexy, romantic chick lit type thing. And I mean, it did get published, actually.
Well, chick lit was big at the time.
Yeah, it was really big. I mean, this was like 2012, 13, 14. I wrote a kind of like if Bridget Jones had been a mom of two, like struggling and trying. I was writing about a woman trying to juggle a family and a career. I mean, it feels slightly autobiographical, and that's why I'm laughing about it. It's a bit embarrassing. So that was the kind of start. And then I always knew that I was going to write sort of more historical fiction stuff. One thing led to another. And I had this history, as I said, about my gran being in London, growing up in the 1930s. And then her family were like laundresses, really poor, dirt poor in the slums of London. And that actually provided the framework, I suppose, for, you know, my earlier book. So that was the kind of start of it, really, for me. And that was kind of how I ended up in the historical fiction area and still writing about women, though, interestingly, and women's experiences of being a mother, but all at different points of in history, you know.
Sure.
Family life, that kind of thing, motherhood, struggle. And women did struggle a lot more back then, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned the research. What was your writing process when you were working on Queen of Thieves? Are you someone who does a lot of outlining and plotting, or did you do the research and kind of have the idea in your head and kind of dive in? How does that work for you?
Well, I think I had I had been working on the research. I'd been like looking at Ancestry and, as I said, looking at these police files and newspaper reports for years. I mean, I had like a file of stuff, but that wasn't a plot. So I think I sort of started with a general idea, you know, a beginning, a middle, and an end. And actually, I do that with all my books. I think, right, okay, there's this main character, then there's this subplot. But I don't generally write it all out. I kind of set off on the journey, knowing roughly where I'm headed with my rucksack on my back. And the characters kind of take me places. I mean, I did, you know, it's really interesting. When people talk about plotting it all out, my husband would agree with this. I never do. I'll just let the characters kind of, I know where roughly where I'm going, and then things will kind of, I don't know, emerge as I'm going along, and I'm knitting in there. Like, you know, if you're writing in the late 40s after the war, you've obviously got some kind of way markers from a historical point of view, certain things happen. So that's always easier because you can think, oh, I know this will happen, that will happen. And, you know, this big world event will happen. Like there'll be a coronation, you know, the king died, the queen was crowned, or the war ended, or I don't know, Churchill gave a speech or something happened. which kind of helps, but I feel it is a kind of, oh, I hate this word, organic process. And sometimes that's quite stressful. Usually halfway through, I'll say to my husband over a drink, you know, oh gosh, I don't know where it's going. I don't know quite how it's going to end. And he says, oh, you say this every time.
That's good advice. Well, what writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories or novels?
Okay. Well, I think number one, like, never give up. You know, don't beat yourself up if you can't write 1,000 words a day, or some of these things, they sort of say, oh, you know, I've got to do this. I must do that chapter. I must complete this much of my book. I think kind of fake targets are not your friend. I think you also need to research the market quite carefully and look at like the length of the novel that you're going to produce. It's pointless producing 200,000 words because no literary agent is really going to have the time to look at that. So, you know, the commercial novel for women's fiction, which is where I write, you're looking at 80 to 100,000. So, you know, and maybe like, I don't know, seek feedback, whether you've got a writer's group or if you're lucky enough to get the attention of a literary agent, if they offer you criticism of your work. And writers need to understand that everybody's going to criticize your work, particularly, you know, those first novels and when you're learning your craft, you need to kind of take on board what's being given to you there. The big one for me is kill your darlings, you know, like kill off. Sometimes the editor will say, or a literary agent will say, well, I just dislike that bit or that character, and you think, I'm so attached to it. If you're so attached to it, really, it should probably go. If they're saying, you have to be prepared to kill your darlings occasionally. I had that with a very well-known book of mine called Keeping My Sister's Secrets, which actually did very well internationally and in this country. And there was some scene I'd written, and the editor was like, I hate that scene. And I kind of wanted to like argue back and go, no, I love that scene. You're wrong. And ultimately, actually, I just said, actually, fair enough, I'll get rid of it. And it made no difference at all to me in the end. And it may have helped the sales of the book. So you have to, yeah, realize that sometimes if you're writing something and you put yourself into it, obviously you're going to love it. You're going to love your characters. You're going to love the plot, the prose, the scenes. It's there to be worked upon by experts in the industry who really are commercial and who know maybe how to knock your book into shape or how to offer you that bit of advice that could just make the difference between you getting a deal and getting published and not. So, you know, I hope that's not a very long-winded answer, but it's basically about just try and be easy to work with. And open to criticism, I think.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sure. So are you working on a new novel now?
Well, I've just written the prequel to Queen of Thieves. So HarperCollins is in America and Canada, has bought the rights to Queen of Clubs, which is out here, which is the sequel, which is like late 50s. And now, and so that's done. And I've just done the first draft of Queen of Diamonds. We're running out of things, aren't we? I'll have to do Queen of Hearts next, which is set really excitingly for me in the 1920s, which is really about how Alice Diamond, the Queen of Thieves, the main character, brings her gang together. Like when we meet her in the late 40s in Queen of Thieves, she's already established as the queen. She's kind of this figure like not to be messed with, really powerful, a bit scary, brutal, violent, daring. And what I wanted to show the reader in this new novel that I've just finished the first draft of, Queen of Diamonds, is how she became that person and what happened to her along the way. And was she always that tough? And I think the answer is no, she was not always that tough. And she probably went through quite a lot of things, which hopefully will make an equally gripping and entertaining story for people.
Well, what novels have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Oh, God, I hate that question. Oh, my Lord. Okay.
Why do you hate it?
Well, because like sometimes I read like really weird stuff. Like I'll go back to reading, I don't know, like Wuthering Heights, Emily Bronte. I've probably read that about 50 times. Rebecca, Daphne du Maurier. But actually, I read, I was lucky enough to get a review copy of Annie Lyons' book. She's an author over here, and it's called the Air Raid Book Club. So again, it was like set in World War II. And it's all about a kind of, it's a really moving story actually about a Jewish refugee girl and a woman who runs a bookstore, which gets bombed in London, and how they kind of come together during the war. You know, the refugee doesn't quite fit in to the family to start with, and it's about their journey, and again that sort of hardship, adversity, young women and a young woman and an older woman, and sort of, you know, really thrown together by war. So that for me was quite a really refreshing read. That was lovely. And oh goodness me! I mean, I've been reading a lot of. I'm looking at doing some more World War II books, so I've been reading a load of historical sources about all sorts of stuff to do with World War II and women. I mean, you know, endless things from newspaper articles, and I mean, they're not really novels. That's what I mean. When I get a bit embarrassed about it, it's like I might be reading, I don't know, some website about weaponry in World War II or some random thing. It's amazing, though, Jeff, when you get going on the research, you kind of, you might go down like a wormhole.
And now with the internet, it's right there at your fingertips.
Yeah, like a lot of the National Archives and things are online. And I enjoy, you know, that we've got this thing called the Imperial War Museum over here in England, which is amazing.
I've actually been there.
Have you?
Yes.
Like it?
I loved it.
Yeah. Well, they have loads of stuff online. I mean, stuff about people's stories during the Blitz, all different things about, you know, how it was life in wartime. And as a writer of historical fiction, that's amazing because you could, you know, you need to sometimes see what a ration card looks like, or, you know, your gas mask box, or what an air raid shelter looks like. What if you're going to write about these things? I don't want to be the writer that gets those details wrong. So I think you have to do a lot of research in whatever era, if you're doing historical fiction, whatever era you're writing in, you've got to be quite thorough, haven't you? I mean, do you feel that?
Sure.
Yeah. It's like if someone gets it like really wrong, it kind of sticks out like a sore thumb. And readers are quite sophisticated, and you know, they will tell you if something doesn't add up or they're confused by something. And if it's in print, it's like, oh no, that's a disaster. So I try not to make those kind of mistakes, because I think my nan would never forgive me. You know, my mother was a Blitz baby, born in London during the Blitz. My nan lived through the Second World War, and as did many of my great aunts and aunts. And I just don't want to kind of get that wrong for them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you and your novels?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a website. It's beazymarsh.com. And I'm on Instagram as, I think I'm at beazymarsh. I'm also on Facebook as beazymarsh author. But my website has pretty much all my books on there. And I try to keep it updated with, like, it's got some background articles I did on the 40 Thieves, the Queen of Thieves, which I wrote for the Daily Mail and the Daily Express. So there's some good sort of historical deep diving research if people want to kind of read in a bit more. There's some good background stuff on the website, particularly to do with Queen of Thieves, which if anyone wants to kind of, you know, have a look, I'd be delighted.
That's wonderful. Well, again, we've been speaking to best-selling writer Beazy Marsh, author of the new novel Queen of Thieves. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And Beazy, thanks for doing this interview.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. That's amazing. Have a great day.
Wonderful.
The sleek sable wrap feels so sumptuous between my fingers. I simply can't resist it. The fur is heavenly and soft. It's exactly what I'm looking for. The whole street is going to be dolled up to the nines for the coronation party, and I don't want to disappoint because I'm royalty too. Queen of my manor, that is. The minute the shop assistant's back is turned, I snatch it from the rail and begin to roll it quickly into a tight furry bundle. I yank open the baggy waistband of my skirt and shove the wrap down the leg of my knickers. They're voluminous, real passion killers, with elastic at each knee, designed with one purpose in mind. Going shopping. Clouting, we call it. And I'm the best in the West End of London. Stepping away from that clothes rail as if I haven't a care in the world. It hasn't always been this easy. I've had my fair share of close shaves, especially in the early days when I was learning my craft. Even now, the thrill of stealing mingles with a fear of being tumbled by the shop staff, which makes my hands clammy. Being a thief wasn't the career I had in mind when I was growing up, but if there's one thing I've learned, it's that you never know the way your life is going to turn out. By the time I left school, I'd never even pinched so much as a sherbet lemon from the pick and mix at Woolworths. All that changed after we won the war. Victory tasted sweet, but as soon as I found out, it couldn't stop the hunger pangs. Beating Hitler was one thing, but Britain was broke. Rationing got worse, and before you knew it, most folks were taking a bit of crooked just to make life more bearable. It was all well and good for politicians to tell us not to grumble, but they never went short, did they? Wherever you looked, there were bomb craters and piles of rubble. Weeds and wild flowers sprung up among the ruins, and excited kids claimed bomb sites as their playgrounds, no matter how many times their mums told them not to. Life went on, but there was little or no money to rebuild. In London, battered by war but bursting with people hungry for some fun and what little luxuries they could afford, the black marketeers and their bosses saw a golden opportunity. After all, gangland was a man's world. That's what they thought. But us women, well, we knew different. This is our story.